Hello and welcome to Let's Talk IVF. Our aim is to cut through the overwhelming amount of clinical information and give you a clearer understanding about the science, the emotional impact, and everything in between. Hosted by Sophia Beziotto, a scientist with 25 years of experience in the field of fertility, we want to thank you for listening. Now, let's get started.
Today we have Dr. Kaylin Silverberg, who is the Medical Director of Texas Fertility Center, a large network of fertility clinics located in Central Texas, and also the co-founder of Ovation Fertility, a national network of IVF labs, genetic labs, and partner physician practices. Hello and welcome, Kaylin.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Good morning down there, I guess, and you know, good afternoon to me.
Exactly. The time zones are incredible, aren't they? Now, can I ask, please, what made you decide to adopt the AI technology for embryo testing, as it's not currently a routine practice in every embryology laboratory as yet?
That's correct. And so, you know, Ovation really tries to remain cutting edge. I mean, we really try and identify technologies that we think are really going to take us to the next level. So we were, you know, our practices were among some of the first larger practices in the country to adopt frozen embryo transfer based on some research that one of our partners in Las Vegas, Bruce Shapiro, has published. He's published extensively on frozen embryo transfer, and his data suggests that when you transfer embryos in a frozen cycle, that their superior outcomes are generated compared to doing embryo transfers in a fresh cycle. And then Bob Anderson, who is one of our just brilliant physicians in Orange County, California, he really did a lot of the pioneering work with pre-implantation genetic testing. And because of his work, he really converted essentially all of his patients to PGT with frozen embryo transfer. And when you look at the SART data, the United States Registry data, out of the top, I know we're not supposed to compare programs, but when you look at the data, out of the top 10 programs in the country, 7 of those top 10 programs are Ovation programs. So what we have done is, one of the benefits of our network is that we take best practices from each laboratory and we put them out across the entire platform. And we've really been able to markedly raise pregnancy rates. And so part of the reason for doing that, and part of what enables us to be able to do that, is that we look for emerging technologies that we think really have some interest. And then we perform validation studies in our own laboratories looking at these technologies. So we performed a very large-scale study with multiple different Ovation practices. Practices not only from my lab in Austin, but also in San Antonio, Indianapolis, Cincinnati. And so we looked at a bunch of different programs. We took over 20,000 static 2D images of day 5 blastocysts. And with those 20,000 images, we knew what the ultimate outcome was. We knew what the PGT results were, whether those blastocysts were euploid or aneuploid. We knew the demographic information and clinical geographical location for the patients. And we then divided those images into 3 groups. So we had those images that we used for training purposes. We had those images that we used to validate the trial. And we had images that we used for blind test sets. And then we developed this AI model. And we validated it and we tested it on over 2,200 embryos from day 5 blastocysts. And then we followed that by a further blind set of almost 300 images from separate clinics.
That sounds like huge numbers. So just for everyone out there, when you're talking about those different types of embryos, you talk about the aneuploidy embryos. Can you explain exactly what you're talking about with those 2 embryo types that you just mentioned before? Because I know it was in the middle, but that was a quick sort of overview there. So can you just drill down a little bit on those 2 embryo types that you were discussing?
Absolutely. So as you know very well, you know, there's 2 types of embryos when you look at a chromosomal perspective. All embryos that are normal should have 46 chromosomes. They should have 44 what are called autosomes, and those are arranged in 2 sets, each containing 22 chromosomes, cleverly numbered 1 through 22. So in addition to those 44 chromosomes, there are 2 what are called sex chromosomes. They're X chromosomes and they're Y chromosomes. So an embryo that has 46 chromosomes with 2 X's is a euploid or chromosomally normal female embryo. An embryo that has 46 chromosomes, one of which is an X and the other of which is a Y, is considered a euploid or chromosomally normal male embryo. And so there are all kinds of things that are called aneuploidy. Aneuploidy means an abnormality in chromosome number. So any embryo that has any number of chromosomes other than 46 is considered aneuploid. And those embryos will uniformly either miscarry, not attach at all, or potentially result in an affected child. So for example, Down syndrome is where you have an extra chromosome. So you have 47 chromosomes instead of 46. And we know that the extra chromosome is an extra copy of chromosome number 21. And so that is a condition called trisomy, or three copies, trisomy 21. So three copies of chromosome number 21. And that results in embryos and subsequent babies and children and even adults with classic Down syndrome findings. On the other hand, you can have a deletion of a chromosome. So not only can you get an extra chromosome, there are occasionally disorders where you can actually be missing a chromosome. So an example of that would be a syndrome called Turner syndrome, where you have only 45 chromosomes, and the chromosome that's missing is actually one of the X's. So that embryo would have two copies of number 1 through 22, so it'd have 44 chromosomes there, but it would only have one X. It would be missing the other chromosome, which would either be an X or a Y. And so you get female infants that have classic findings of short stature and other findings suggestive of Turner syndrome. That's really the difference between euploidy and aneuploidy.
Perfect. Thank you for explaining that. Now, I actually have interviewed a lady that has Turner syndrome, and she's just absolutely gorgeous. But yes, talking about the genetic issues, obviously, that come along with having that syndrome, sure, as you discussed. So it's quite a fascinating one, and I hope to talk to her soon on the podcast. I guess getting back to, and I know this is very much what people are looking at, is they want a score or they want a ranking. What is the percentage or ranking for an embryo that is deemed to be a better score or likely to achieve an ongoing pregnancy when you're using this AI technology?
So in our studies, we believe that a score over 50 results in an embryo that's much more likely to be viable. It's much more likely to be able to attach, grow, and actually develop a heartbeat. And those were the endpoints of our study. So we looked not only at positive pregnancy tests, we actually looked at the development of a sac and the development of a heartbeat.
All right, perfect. Now, in regards to patient outcomes, what are you seeing in the percentages of abnormalities generally? So is it a high percentage of abnormalities in these embryos that are screened?
Well, we know from PGT that embryo viability and euploidy is directly related to a woman's age. So, for example, when we participated in a study that was published by Genesis Genetics, and they looked at thousands of embryos, and we were able to determine the incidence of euploidy or aneuploidy by a woman's age. And what we found out was that for women under 35, right at 50% of beautiful day 5 blastocysts were chromosomally abnormal.
Wow.
And these numbers, they continue to rise, so that, you know, by age 40, approximately 70 some odd percent of women, and by 41 or 42, over 85% of these beautiful embryos that, you know, if you would look under a microscope, you would think, well, those are great embryos, they've got a terrific chance for pregnancy. But unfortunately, when you look at the chromosomes, over 85% were chromosomally abnormal.
Okay, that's incredibly high, isn't it? With this technology, have you noticed a decrease in the embryos that are being frozen? And you said you're sort of using 50 as a guide. So you're getting much less frozen, I guess, as a result of using this technology and knowing that the abnormalities are present.
Yeah, that's correct. So we're very clearly able, we think, to be able to distinguish between viable embryos and non-viable embryos. And we've gone to an exclusive frozen embryo transfer program. So we no longer transfer embryos fresh, except for very rare circumstances. So almost always we transfer embryos during a frozen embryo transfer cycle. And when we do PGT, or when we use this artificial intelligence technology, we are able to distinguish, we think, between normal embryos, abnormal embryos. And so we are much less likely to freeze embryos that are chromosomally abnormal.
And that's fantastic, I guess, in terms of costs as well, which I know are considerably higher in the US. Can you talk a little more about the cost to the patient for this AI technology?
Sure. We're still working this out with Life Whisperer, but we anticipate that the eventual cost is going to be somewhere between $250 and $500. Now, at the moment, we're still using it preferably in tandem with PGT, because we've not yet been able to finish studies. We're looking at studies now where we're going to hopefully be able to compare to determine if, in fact, you can really use artificial intelligence technology without PGT much more reliably. So at the moment, we don't have the answer to that question. But assuming that we do eventually, then So there are tremendous advantages of the artificial intelligence technology because, as you know, with PGT, you have to, first of all, you have to use ICSI to get fertilization of embryos. So what we have to do with ICSI, what that means is it stands for intracytoplasmic sperm injection. And what that means is that we have to pick up a single sperm with a microscopic needle and inject that sperm directly into an egg. And our embryologists are really good. They're really talented. But unfortunately, we've never been able to find an embryologist who has X-ray vision that would allow him or her to look at the chromosomes within a sperm and determine if that sperm is chromosomally normal or not.
Yes.
And we know from all kinds of studies that the majority of sperm are just unfortunately not chromosomally normal. So no matter how good our embryologists are, if they pick up a sperm that is not chromosomally normal and inject that sperm into an egg, the second they inject that sperm into the egg, they have created a chromosomally abnormal embryo. So with artificial intelligence, we're not required to do ICSI. So we are much more amenable to the situation in nature where, you know, in nature, most normal sperm tend to work, most abnormal sperm tend not to work. And there are studies that are published in our literature that show that when you have a guy who's got normal sperm, if you do ICSI on him, you are more likely to get lower pregnancy rates. And presumably the reason is that in nature, his normal sperm would work and he would produce more normal embryos. Whereas with ICSI, we're potentially picking up sperm that are abnormal, creating abnormal embryos, and this results in a lower pregnancy rate. So that's one advantage. The other major advantage is that with PGT, as you know, we have to actually biopsy the embryo. So we have to drill a hole in the membrane around the embryo. We have to then tease out anywhere from 3 to 7 cells from this embryo that has about 128 cells at that time. We then have to freeze the embryo at 320 degrees below zero. We have to freeze the cells. We ship the cells off to a testing facility. There they undergo DNA amplification to make multiple copies of those cells, to make millions of copies of that DNA. And then we do the analysis. And so with artificial intelligence, we don't have to do either one of those things. So the two steps that can sometimes do profound damage to an embryo, inadvertent damage, but damage nonetheless, injecting the sperm into the egg and then removing cells from the embryo, we can totally bypass those steps. So we're very optimistic that if this technology works as well as we believe that it will, that we'll be able at some point in time to replace PGT, which, you know, would result in, again, in addition to the avoiding damage to the egg and to the embryo, it would also result in a significant cost savings and drive down the cost of IVF even further.
That's really incredible, isn't it? Because as you said, it is so much more. The cost is extraordinary, but even the intervention and the level of intervention you're talking about there, to be able to reduce that by what you're saying in terms of not needing necessarily the ICSI, certainly not needing the PGT testing, is amazing in terms of that lower intervention equals lower cost all day long.
Right.
So that's incredible for the patients. If there are any other laboratories considering using the AI technology or trialing it as you are, what are the physical requirements that they should be considering? So what sort of space does it take up, and do they actually need to do what you're doing at the moment, which is that comparison of doing the PGT testing and doing the AI in a parallel? Do they need to do both of those? What other considerations would there be for the laboratories?
Well, I think that this data is still relatively new. As much as we believe it and as much as we're excited about it, you know, we're always cautious. It's like that old adage, when a new test comes out in medicine, you better use it quick before it stops working. And the reason is that, you know, nobody comes out and says, hey, I had this great idea and I tried it on, you know, 50 people and it failed miserably in all of them. Nobody has a study like that. Everybody always says, well, you know, I had this great idea and I tried it on 50 people and 60 of them got pregnant.
Yes.
You know, and then other people try and do the same. They try and reproduce the data and then the pregnancy rates are lower and lower and lower. And, you know, then eventually it all comes kind of crashing back down to earth. So, you know, we're very excited about this, but we still are very cautious about using it clinically by itself because there's just not a lot of data yet. And we would love for other people to be able to do this. We'd love for other people to validate our data and our studies. I know that Life Whisperer is actively working with other groups right now to try and do just that. And so, you know, we're very optimistic that in the very near future, we're going to see even more data that's supportive of this. And it just makes sense because, you know, with machine learning, deep learning, artificial intelligence, whatever you want to call it, I mean, this is just the wave of the future. It's happening in every industry. And this is the way that we're applying it to what we're doing, which really is to be able to get the computers. They're not emotional. They make decisions based solely on what they see and solely on objective parameters. Whereas humans, we still apply a lot of subjectivity to decision making.
Very emotional decision making as well. Humans as a routine, that's generally our default position. I have actually heard some exciting news of one of the clinics in Australia taking on this technology, which I think is incredible. Are you able to share any news that's happening with Ovation Fertility at the moment? What are you currently working on or getting ready to publish?
Well, I'm afraid that what we're working on at the moment is trying to deal with this COVID-19 virus. I mean, I was on conference calls most of the day today about how we're adjusting and how we're dealing with this and what changes we're making in our laboratories and our protocols and how we're handling our employees and our patients. And so, unfortunately, that's kind of, you know, the task du jour at the moment. And we're all basically focused on that. But if you can set that aside, we've just got some very exciting things that are happening in our laboratories. We're trying to determine, for example, can we do PGT without ICSI? And there's data out there that suggests that if you have any sperm that are stuck on the surface of an embryo and you then biopsy that embryo to perform PGT, that during the amplification process, you can amplify the DNA from the sperm that are adherent as well, and thus render your PGT results meaningless. Well, we think that, in fact, there's evidence that suggests that you have to have many sperm, possibly as many as 9, that are picked up during this process. So we're very anxious to be able to continue this work that we're looking at now to determine if PGT is just as accurate, or maybe even more so, without doing ICSI for guys who don't have male factor. Because if we can combine that literature, that if you do PGT on guys who are normal, you're going to result in lower pregnancy rates. If we can eliminate that step, we strongly believe that there's a good likelihood that we're going to be able to have more embryos that are viable, more embryos that are chromosomally normal, higher pregnancy rates and lower miscarriage rates. So we're very intent on conducting that research at the moment too, in addition to all the artificial intelligence stuff that we're working on.
That's incredible, isn't it? The fact that you could perhaps potentially bypass and not have to do the ICSI, which again is another added cost for these patients that would otherwise not have to routinely undergo this process, along with genetic testing. Every step and every extra intervention, unfortunately, results in an extra cost. So that sounds like an amazing research that you're doing at the moment. And we certainly will follow up with you to see how you're going with that in the future, because anything to reduce cost, as you know, is a good thing.
That's the mission of our company. That's the entire mission, is to reduce the cost of a single healthy baby. And I mean, just those few words kind of sum up everything, because we've got cost, we have singletons, because we know that that's so important, because multiple pregnancy is just, it's one of the biggest cost drivers in the system, and it's one of the biggest problems. And then also multiple pregnancies, you know, leads to prematurity, and then you have all the issues, not just the cost, but the medical issues and the psychosocial issues that come along with multiple pregnancy and premature babies and all kinds of additional expense.
I love it. I love what you're doing. It sounds like amazing research, and we will definitely follow up with you to see how that's all going. So at the moment, it is incredible. Anything to reduce costs and to obviously improve pregnancy rates for these patients is the way to be going moving forward. Can you tell me, what are you reading at the moment, or what would you recommend to others?
Oh, God. I would strongly recommend that people don't read what I'm reading, because what I'm reading at the moment is everything related to this virus.
How
countries, how they're responding in other countries and mistakes that others have made that we're trying not to replicate here, and how we can keep our patients safe, how we can keep our employees safe. I mean, this is why, you know, it's so funny. I was telling my wife the other day, you know, I've been sleeping like a log for, I don't know, months and months and months. And for the last 3 nights, I keep waking up at 2 or 3 in the morning, and I just keep waking up and thinking about these things and, you know, kind of worrying about what we need to do or what we should be doing that we're not doing yet.
Oh, dear. Okay. So not exciting reading at all, given the media frenzy that's out there currently. Yeah. All right. Now, when was the last time that you did something for the first time, Kaylin, and what was it?
Oh, boy. Well, I hate to end on a downer, but you're asking me a question, so... The last time I did something for the first time was, this afternoon, I came up with contingency plans of how we would scale back our practice and potentially close for a short period of time in the event that we had to.
Oh, no.
That's the last time I did something for the first time, and I hope I never have to do it again, and I hope it didn't come to pass, and I hope that your listeners all stay safe, and I hope that they, you know, that they exercise the precautions that they need to keep themselves and their families safe.
Absolutely, will do. Well, there's always Zoom and Skype, isn't there? Those are amazing modalities for interviews and appointments.
They are. They're fantastic. And we've already converted most of our consultations over to some kind of either telecommunications or video communications. So we're trying to do that already.
Perfect. Well, look, it has been an absolute pleasure to catch up with you today. I will certainly check back in with you, because the research that you're doing with Ovation Fertility just sounds, as you said, cutting edge, reducing costs for patients and increasing those live births for these patients of yours is incredible. And we will definitely check in and see what is happening and the latest with Ovation Fertility very soon.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Kellen.
Thanks for joining us, and we hope you learned something new today. If you'd like more information, please visit our website at www.ivfcoachingclinic.com.au or our Facebook page, IVF Coaching Clinic, where you can talk to Sophia directly and find out more information about coaching and how it can assist you further. Until next time.